From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Steve Malzberg on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, welcome aboard. It is 10 p.m. here on the East Coast of the United States, and you know what time it is and what day it is wherever you are listening to the Steve Malzberg Show on TNT Radio. It's, wow, what a weekend it's been, what a day it has been. More developments in the Paul Pelosi break-in at Nancy Pelosi and Paul Pelosi's home in San Francisco. We'll get you plenty of information in a little bit. Also, big Supreme Court oral arguments, 5 hours of oral arguments earlier today on affirmative action in admissions to universities, two in particular, Harvard and University of North Carolina. So we'll discuss that as well. We have more Joe Biden shenanigans. I'll just leave it at that for now. But right now, you know, we have elections in this country coming up a week from tomorrow. But in Israel, the elections are going to start in a few hours because it's Tuesday there already, and their elections are on Tuesday. And joining us now is a man who knows something about elections and politics. He's the former mayor of Shiloh in the region of Samaria in the state of Israel. He's also the author of seven books, and he's the founder and president of the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund. David Rubin is with us. Hello, sir.
Hello, Steve. Good to be with you.
Yes, good to talk to you again. All right. So, wow, crazy times all around the world. Let's focus on Israel. A lot at stake here in these elections. And if a majority could be reached in the Knesset, if one party can you know assume power, it's going to be very close. Let's start with Bibi Netanyahu, where he is politically speaking, and what are the possibilities that he becomes, that he's able to have form a government with the majority, which is 61 seats in the Knesset at least, and that he becomes prime minister again.
Well, it may well happen. Benjamin Netanyahu, who you referred to by his nickname, Bibi, is the longest serving, well, not currently, he's not currently prime minister, but he has been the longest serving prime minister in Israel's history, and he wants to be prime minister again. So there is this election, and he heads the largest party in Israel, which is called the Likud. But, you know, sometimes it's hard to explain this to Americans because the political system is so different. But in Israel, we're a parliamentary system, but it's parliamentary system on steroids. democracy on steroids, literally, because you have so many parties. And the largest party, which is Netanyahu's Likud party, they're not likely to get more than 35 seats out of the 120 seats in the Knesset. You need to get at least 61. That's the magical number.
Right.
So let's say that Likud gets 35 seats. Then he's going to have to piece together another 26 seats from the smaller parties that get into the Knesset. So basically, we're going to have to hear the results of the election, and then we have to see, okay, which party got how many seats? This one got 15, this one got 8, this one got 7. Let's put them all together and see if it reaches 61. That's the deal.
Yeah, well, that's always the interesting part. And last time it didn't work out in Netanyahu's favor, certainly. Talk about one man who has garnered a lot of attention, and so much so that reportedly Joe Biden, although he does what he's told to do, I believe, Joe Biden expressed great concern and told Israel and the Likud people not to get involved. Don't bring this man and his party into the government. And I'm talking about Itamar Ben-Gvir, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Who is he?
You are.
And why is everybody so afraid of him?
Well, I'm actually very impressed that you pronounced it correctly. but yeah, Itamar Ben-Gvir is a far right legislator who was a co-head of a political party, the most right wing political party called the Religious Zionist Party. Okay, it consists of two factions. And he's the head of one of those two factions, and they're running as a technical bloc, and his popularity has just been skyrocketing. He's in favor. What distinguishes him from the others? He is in favor of taking a very, very strong stand against the Muslim terrorism that has afflicted Israel for several decades now. And has been getting a lot worse in the past few months. So that's Itamar Ben-Gvir. He wants to be the public security minister in the next government if Netanyahu is able to piece together a majority. So the deal is this: if Netanyahu is able to piece together a majority, there's going to be intense pressure from this right-wing partner, from Itamar Ben-Gvir and his colleague Bezalel Smotrich, and they are going to be demanding certain right-wing policies that Israel has never truly carried out in order to restore security for Israel and its citizens. Basically what Ronald Reagan used to call peace through strength.
Right. Let me interrupt. How many seats do they have in their party?
Well, we're going to have to see what the results are of the election. According to the latest polls, Netanyahu gets 30 to 35 seats. According to the latest polls, this right-wing party gets anywhere between 12 and 15 seats.
So it's significant.
They may end up with more.
Right.
They may end up with more because it's kind of taboo for somebody to say that they're supporting a far right party.
Right.
Whether they're a good party or not a good party.
Absolutely. Well, I never believe the polls here. Yeah. I never believe the polls here either. So why do you think the American government or the administration as it is comprised today, why do you think they've been so adamant reportedly and so blunt, and not wanting him, Gvir, to have the role that he may get?
Well, we have to remember that the Israeli system leans right of center, and the Israeli public is right of center, whereas the American government is certainly left of center and probably a lot more than that. And you astutely pointed out that Biden isn't really the one making the decisions. Perhaps in theory, yes, but that guy who's been campaigning pretty intensely the past few days for Democratic candidates. And yes, he does have that charisma and he does have that showman's presence.
Yeah, but
even though he is a former president.
He backed Hillary and she lost against Trump. He suffered some of the most devastating midterm losses, especially his first term in American history. So, yeah, he's got the charisma and everything. But I wonder how much he still resonates. Let me ask you a question. It's a little off topic, but, Donald Trump. And it's the second time he said something like this. And it's the second time, of course, the media, all he has to do is open his mouth and he's, Hitler and an anti-Semite and blah, 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 blah. But he recently said, because he looks at the polls in America and he sees that among support for Israel, evangelicals overwhelmingly top Jews in support for Israel. Support for Israel is not what you'd expect from American Jews. And then the support varies in its degree of support when people say they do support it. And Palestinian support among Jews is higher than you would think. So he, in response to, you know, for whatever reason, he was giving an interview and I don't know what the question he was asked or what led him to it. But he said that, you know, American Jews better wake up. You know, and he said, I've did so much for Israel and the Democrats don't look at the Democrats. And he says, you know, and the Democrats in this country, Jews in this country vote 75% to 80% Democrat. So he said, they better wake up before it's too late. Somehow that's like the next coming of Hitler. Anti-Semitic tropes, the ADL went off on him. Every media personality in the country on the left went after him. And I sit there and I say, what are you, out of your mind? That's not anti-Semitic. It's absolutely true. What's your take on that?
Yeah, well, I heard the statements and I heard the reaction and I heard Biden's radical lesbian spokesman and at the press conference. I heard what she said, that it's anti-Semitic and it's terrible. And look, that's all politics. The bottom line is, and you know, anyone who's read my book, Trump and the Jews, knows that I research Trump's background in depth, and I research Trump in depth from a Jewish perspective. Okay, that's why it's called Trump and the Jews. And the fact is that President Trump has been, President Trump was, and perhaps we'll soon say has been, President Trump was the best president for Israel in terms of America-Israel relations than any president in American history. And there have been some good ones, Harry Truman and
Nixon,
you know, some others. Trump was the best. So if some American Jews who were totally disconnected, unfortunately and sadly, from their Jewish roots and their Jewish identities, you know, if they've turned liberalism into their new religion, then you know that's just a very sad thing. But it speaks more to their problem than it does to President Trump. President Trump is a great leader. You know, there's a running joke. I don't know if you've heard it. What's the difference between President Trump and your average assimilated or reformed Jew in America? What's the difference?
I don't know. Tell me.
The difference is that Trump has Jewish grandchildren. How could he be anti-Semitic?
Well, the whole thing is insane. I'm glad that that's your take on it. I wish we could talk for hours. I know you're very tired. You flew in from Israel today. I appreciate you doing this. But one question, give me a prediction on what you think might happen and the role of Gaviv if in fact, Netanyahu becomes the prime minister.
Okay, there are two scenarios that I see happening. One is that Netanyahu gets the 61 or more, in which case Ben-Gvir and his party will be the significant power broker when it comes to Israeli policy. They're going to play a major role in the Israeli government. Biden and his advisors will be going crazy. They will be very upset and they will be pressuring Netanyahu, and Netanyahu will have to stand up to the pressure. The other possibility is that we end up with another tie where Netanyahu does not have a majority, where nobody has a majority, and they have to go to another election. If that happens, then Netanyahu will be pressured from his party to leave politics and to let somebody else take over, in which case a right-wing government will be formed. So those are the two scenarios that I see playing out.
Okay,
there is virtually no chance that the current Prime Minister Lapid will be able to form a majority.
Well, I'm going to sleep better tonight. And then when I wake up and I start hearing the results, I will hearken back to this conversation. David Rubin, you got a website or something people can find you at, and your list of books and everything else?
Absolutely. DavidRubinIsrael.com. David Rubin, R-U-B-I-N, DavidRubinIsrael.com. And they could also get information about the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund for the terror victim children. And that is at ShilohIsraelChildren.org.
It's been a pleasure, my friend, and I hope we speak again soon. Stay well and stay safe.
Thank you, Steve.
Take care. David Rubin, ladies and gentlemen, the former mayor of Shiloh in Israel. Fascinating conversation. I hope you thought so, too. And we don't have to wait too long, hopefully, you know, for those results to start coming in anyway. We may have to wait a while for the actual results, the final results, but hopefully we'll have them before the, the next Tuesday when the U.S. elections start. But it's going to be he painted two scenarios, which to me, I'd rather have Netanyahu win outright and have Gavir, you know, and his party have the influence. But either scenario doesn't include the left taking power. So that's always a good one for me. All right, folks, we have a lot to get to. By the way, I know on Friday I said Dinesh D'Souza would be with us today. Dinesh D'Souza will be with us tomorrow. And Kenny Chu, who has done so much work and so much writing and has written a great book all up on the Harvard case that the Supreme Court heard today, he will join us on Thursday. And I'm thinking out loud to myself as I talk to you on Wednesday. I'm drawing a blank, but I shout Dick Morris. So an all-star week. And of course, you are the biggest all-stars of all. I'm Steve Malzberg right here on TNT Radio.
Jeremy Nell on TNT Radio.
When we talk about the West or America, I'm actually really referring to the state. I mean, I'm not talking about citizens or civilians. I mean, the average person doesn't represent, you know, the Biden administration or the CIA. We are talking about the sort of meta level constructs.
But then again, if we're democracies, if we're truly democracies, as we like to sort of broadcast to the world, the people do have a lot of influence over the long arc of history of, you know, the ideas that governments are expressing, that the state's expressing, whether that's a more compassionate state, whether that's a more rational state, rational actor. And at the moment, yeah, there are some very irrational things that seem to be irrational in terms of foreign policy, especially the NATO powers, namely Britain and the United States. But then if you step back even further, you're talking about the meta level in great power politics. If you read or listen to someone like John Mearsheimer, he'll say that actually, no, this is very rational behavior. This is the rationale of power. This is how power behaves.
Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips that you plan in advance, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends for which you make a group chat 3 months before so that nobody or anything is missing. Or your daughter's first birthday party. You planned it with such dedication that instead of the first, it felt like our quinces. The same way you plan each detail for those moments. Start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Protecting your family is the best plan you can make. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
You're with Steve Malzberg on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, so much to get to, and thank you for being there. And follow me at Steve M Talk, please, and on Twitter, Facebook. Steve M Talk, and also Instagram, which I don't post enough stuff on. Okay. You know what's going on. If you listen to the show on Friday, you know what's going on. Paul Pelosi, the story goes that, someone broke into his apartment because there was no security in San Francisco, and Nancy Pelosi, not apartment, house, apartment, house. I don't understand how there's no security. I don't mean like special police. I mean, even an alarm, something, anything. Guy just there alone, 80 something years old in Nancy Pelosi's house. And there's nothing. That's one thing. But that's not even important right now. The media reaction is and was even before we knew who did it, why they did it, anything about the perpetrator, was that it's Donald Trump's fault. It's MAGA's fault. It's the right wing's fault. How dare they say anything bad about Nancy Pelosi? You say something bad about Pelosi, this is what happens, which, of course, is a pretext to, you know, criminalizing speech. I mean, that's insane. Just totally insane. So I want to take you through this. I want you to hear a bite. You know who Alec Baldwin is, right? I'll never understand. Well, I do understand. If this guy was on the right, he would have lost his job and we never would have heard from him again after December 11th, 1998. And after he said what you're going to hear him say on that date on the Conan O'Brien show, which I believe was on CBS at the time, you know, he went on to there's the famous phone answering machine where that his daughter or, you know, he left a message for his daughter. He was separated, divorced from his wife, his famous wife. And he left a message for his daughter, calling her all kinds of names. And I've played that over the years. That would have gotten kicked out of show business if he was on the right. You know, the things he said to photographers, some consider them homophobic and others, that would have got it kicked out of showbiz. But instead, he came up as a spokesman for this bank and for this product and on this movie and that movie and this movie and that movie and this TV show and Saturday Night Live. And, you know, he could do no wrong because he's a liberal. Because he's a liberal. So I want you to hear. You want to know how far back this talk of violence against Republicans goes from people on the left? And it goes back further than this, but let's go back to 1998. They just were impeaching President Bill Clinton. Henry Hyde, Republican congressman, was the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, which was in charge of the impeachment proceedings. And this creepy jerk, Alec Baldwin, goes on Conan O'Brien. He's a guest. And here's what he says in reference to the impeachment. This is 302.
And I'm thinking to myself, if we were in other countries, we would all right now, all of us together, all of us together would go down to Washington and we would stone Henry Hyde to death. We would stone him to death.
So stone Henry Hyde to death and go to Washington and kill their wives and their children. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? Now, you tell me if he were conservative, he would have had a job ever again in Hollywood. Of course not. But of course, he's not conservative. So there you go. So stone Henry Hyde to death, kill his wife, kill their children. And that's just, you know. I played for you on Friday the cuts that I've played for you before, which I might play for you again, maybe today. They're going to be loaded every night, loaded and ready to go. Now, one of those or two of those cuts are from this man. God help us all. This is the president of the United States. And here he was talking about what happened to Nancy Pelosi's husband. This is cut number 300.
This is despicable. There's no place in America. There's too much violence, political violence, too much hatred, too much vitriol. And what makes us think that one party can talk about stolen elections, COVID being a hoax, there's all a bunch of lies, and it not affect people who may not be so well balanced? What makes us think that it's not going to corrode the political climate? Enough is enough is enough.
So you can't talk about COVID vaccines. You can't talk about Nancy Pelosi. You can't talk about anybody on the left. What's wrong with you people? Don't you know that there's at least one crazy person out there who will hear what you say and try to kill somebody? You better shut up, says the senile old man president. And here's 3. I'll get it right one day. 301.
Every person of good conscience needs to clearly and unambiguously stand up against the violence in our politics, regardless what your politics are.
All right. Now I want to I'm going to go out of order here. Could we go to 303? I'll call for it 1 second. This was him on Monday, Biden, drawing a direct line again, direct line from what Republicans and people on the right are saying to what happened to Nancy Pelosi's husband. It's a direct line. You ready for it? 303.
It's one thing to condemn the violence, but you can't condemn the violence unless you condemn those people who continue to argue the election was not real, that it's being stolen, that all the malarkey that's being put out there to undermine democracy. You can't just apologize and say the violence. It affects people's mentality. It affects how people think, particularly people who are not maybe as stable as other people. So the talk has to stop. That's the problem. We can't just say, I feel badly about the violence. We condemn it. Condemn what produces the violence. And this talk produces the violence.
Oh, the talk produces the violence. Oh, well, there's two interesting facts here. And I'm going to go out of order again. Sorry, I'm going to call for 269 and 270 in a minute. 269, 270. Oh, the talk produces the violence. This nut job, nudist, drifter, wackadoo guy who attacked Pelosi's husband was listening to Republicans, no doubt. But it's interesting. The talk produces the violence. Enough is enough. Just shut up, says the man who, as vice president of the United States, said this about Donald Trump. Cut 269.
Because I'm a star. Because I'm a billionaire, I can do things other people can't. What a disgusting assertion for anyone to make. The press always asks me, don't I wish I were debating him? No, I wish you were in high school. I could take him behind the gym. That's what I wish.
That's what he wished. He wished he, this is the vice president of the United States reacting to the grab him by the pussy comment. I could take him outside and beat him up. And in case you were unclear, 2 years later, when he was presidential candidate, Joe Biden, here's 270.
They asked me, would I like to debate this gentleman? And I said, no. I said, if we were in high school, I'd take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
Hey, Joe, the talk produces the violence. Duh. You couldn't sit down and talk about hypocrisy and come up with things like this, because if you wrote this like for a movie or a play or anything, they'd say this can happen. What? Someone who said that is going to say this? Yeah. Don't make me play Cory Booker now saying my testosterone makes me want to punch Donald Trump in the face. Don't make me play that. Don't let me make me play Charles Schumer, another Democrat senator, warning Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh, two conservative Supreme Court justices. If you go ahead with this decision, you'll unleash the whirlwind. You won't know what hit you. That's a threat of violence. As I said Friday, they can't be elected out of office. They can't be impeached. What's going to hit them? Violence. And in fact, someone tried to assassinate Brett Kavanaugh. Did the whole media go crazy and say that Charles Schumer's comments were directly responsible for the assassination attempt? No, he's a Democrat. It doesn't work that way. When Rand Paul, the Republican senator from Kentucky, was attacked and beaten by his neighbor and broke six of his ribs. You know what one of the hosts on MSNBC said? This is my favorite story. And whoever else was there chuckled and laughed. I think she's now at CNN. No kidding. This is my favorite story. Rand Paul was attacked and they broke six of his ribs. What a great story. These people are sick. They're sick. And of course, not to leave out Mazie Hirono, the senator from Hawaii, recently on the floor of the Senate said that the abortion decision was, quote, literally a call to arms, end quote. That doesn't mean figuratively. She said literally. She made sure to say literally. That means go get your guns, go get your weapons, go get your arms. Did that cause violence? If it does, are they going to say it? Of course not. She's a Democrat. It's okay. And what have they said about Donald Trump and his family? If God forbid something ever happened to them, would they say, it's the political climate, it's the rhetoric, it's the, but you got to stop the talk? No, they'll say, well, they deserved it. Or maybe they'll say, this is the best story ever. Because that's how the stinking lousy pieces of garbage that parade around as journalists in this country conduct themselves. It's how they really feel inside, and they're not afraid to show it. So now they're using this this attack on Pelosi's husband as we got to shut down the right. You can't have freedom of speech. You can't say what you want. Look what happened to Nancy Pelosi's husband. For years, people have been demonizing Nancy Pelosi. And see, ha ha. You better shut up. Think I'm kidding? Let's flip the page. Let's go to a 280. This is Face the Nation on CBS on Sunday with Margaret Brennan, the host, and Congressman Tom Emmer, Republican, who put out an ad a couple of years ago saying, let's send Nancy Pelosi back to San Francisco. And he showed himself shooting at a shooting range. That's all he did. He didn't shoot Nancy Pelosi. It had nothing to do with that. But you would have thought that his ad a couple of years ago caused the guy to go get Pelosi's husband. Listen to this insanity by Margaret Brennan. This is 280.
I want to ask you about this when it comes to political violence. On your Twitter feed, you posted this video we're going to show just a few days ago where you're firing a gun and it says, enjoyed exercising my Second Amendment rights, hashtag fire Pelosi. Why is there a gun in a political ad at all?
It wasn't an ad. I was tweeting out
hashtag
something that I had just done.
Fire Pelosi with a weapon.
Well, now
wouldn't a pink slip be more fitting if it's about firing her?
Okay, I thought this. I thought this was a political ad. I believed her, which she was wrong. And it was more recently. I thought it was. I tried to look when they showed it on Face the Nation. I looked at the date of the tweet, but I thought it said a couple of years ago. Okay, so whenever he put it out there, okay, but it was before Pelosi's husband. Anything happened to Pelosi's husband. So she, why would you put out anything with a gun? He's at a firing range exercising his Second Amendment right. It's what separates him from Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats. How dare he? Here's cut 281.
It's interesting, Margaret. It's interesting, Margaret, that we're talking about this morning when a couple of years back when a Bernie Sanders supporter shot Steve Scalise.
Which was horrendous.
When a Bernie
and
Sanders
horrific,
supporter shot Steve Scalise. I never heard you
weapons.
Or anyone else in the media trying to blame Democrats for what happened. We need to stay
we
focused on what we're all doing.
Extensive coverage of what happened to Steve Scalise. There's extensive
Nobody
news
tried
coverage,
to equate Democrats' rhetoric.
Okay. So he's saying that when Steve Scalise, as I talked about on Friday as well, when Steve Scalise and five other people were shot during a softball practice, you may recall, in 2018, I think. Anyway, by a former Bernie Sanders campaign volunteer. Did you hear all this kind of stuff? Oh, Bernie Sanders better tone it down. Look what he did. He inspired this man to take a gun and shoot Republicans on the baseball field. He actually even asked, are those Republicans or Democrats? And when he heard they were Republicans, he opened fire. He almost killed Steve Scalise. And Congressman Emmer is absolutely right. absolutely right. And she says, we covered it extensively. You covered it. But you didn't blame Bernie Sanders and his political positions, which this shooter on his website or whatever, and his postings echoed about wage inequality and low wages and different things. He was ticked off. He had lost his job. Of course, they wouldn't blame Bernie Sanders. Of course not. Here's cut number 282.
Let's I'm not talking about your rhetoric. I'm talking about what you posted. You're shooting a gun. Our viewers just saw it.
Yeah, right.
Hashtag fire Pelosi.
Exercising our Second Amendment rights, having
fun. That's not a debate about the Second Amendment. Yep. That's not a debate about the Second Amendment. Hashtag yes, fire Pelosi.
Yes, it is.
I'm
running the campaign
operation. Do you not understand that is suggestive to people who are in a bad state and in this current environment, how risky it is? As you're talking about the importance of lowering the rhetoric.
I disagree with
you. Why do you leave that up?
Again, I never saw anyone after Steve Scalise was shot by a Bernie Sanders supporter
trying
to equate Democrat rhetoric with those actions. Please don't do that.
I'm talking about what's happening now. I'm talking about what's happening now. Forget Steve Scalise. We covered that extensively. I'm talking about what's happening now.
These people are loony bins. They are loony. You're firing a gun. Don't you know there's a mentally incapacitated person out there that might see that and take action? You can't fire a gun. It's really sick and scary. And don't think if they get into power, keep power, increase power, that that's not where we're headed. Don't think that for a second. Here is former Congressman David Nunes, who's now the CEO of Trump's Truth Social, Republican. And he was asked about all this. And he said, hey, when Antifa attacked my farm, I didn't hear you people saying anything. Here's cut number 283.
No one should condone this violence. But I want to take people back as someone whose family has been attacked by these raging lunatics. You know, where were the Democrats and Pelosi when people were outside my home with my young daughters in the home and my wife by themselves? Where were they when they targeted my 98-year-old grandmother? Where were they when Antifa showed up on my family's farm? This is all stuff that the Democrats have continued to allow to happen, whether I could go into the Supreme Court justices' homes, et cetera, et cetera.
The answer, where were they? They couldn't give a rat's behind. Where were they when that poor door-to-door campaigner, the canvasser for Marco Rubio a couple of weeks ago, was in Hialeah, Florida, wearing a Rubio T-shirt and a DeSantis hat, and four, as Rubio said, four animals attacked him and beat him so bad he needs facial reconstruction, sicked a dog on him. Why is it that Margaret Brennan's network never even covered it? Because they couldn't care less. Good for him. Good. I hope it was a big dog, she probably says to herself, or out loud in the newsroom, as they laugh and laugh and laugh. Who wears a DeSantis hat? He deserves what he gets. These are punks. They're punks. They're hypocritical, left-wing, radical, agenda-driven, non-journalist punks. Make no mistake about it. All right, we're going to come back and continue. I'm Steve Malzberg right here on TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Is he a good guy? I don't know. I've never met him. Do he and his family have some nefarious connections? Again, I don't know. I've seen people say that he does, but I haven't seen any sauce on that. What I can tell you for certain, however, is that I absolutely love Elon Musk's savage sense of humor. Dude buys Twitter, changes his Twitter bio to read Chief Twit, and then posts a video of him walking into Twitter's San Francisco headquarters carrying a sink, and the tweet said, "Let that sink in," meaning, I'm here, folks, like it or not. Today's meeting with his staff was just the cherry on top. Look at the photo. Never a more entitled, smug, self-important group of wokesters was ever found. You can see it in their facial expressions and especially their body language. Elon said he was going to lay 75% of them off. I hope he does. But Elon, please give me back at TimboTim62 and at MAGA Institute. Thanks, bro. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
The bushfire was so unpredictable, it was important to have a plan.
We stayed up to date with our phones and the radio. We knew it was coming.
I never thought it would actually happen. I'm glad we had a plan.
You have to prepare your property and your family.
Always had a plan.
We can all be bushfire ready. Do your 5-minute bushfire plan today.
The Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, welcome back. Let's move from CBS Face the Nation to Meet the Press from Sunday, the round table via Real Clear Politics. Chuck Todd plays a Republican ad on Pelosi that refers to her as, I think, the boogeyman or something like that. And oh, my God, guess what? That's responsible for what happened to her husband also. Here's cut number 284.
Welcome back. The attack at the home of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has once again thrust the view into view the rise of threats of violence in our politics, deep divisions within America that have normalized an increasingly hostile rhetoric. As we said at the top of the show, there are forces inside the GOP that have painted the speaker as a political boogeyman. Negative ads featuring Pelosi have been running in congressional races for more than a decade. Here's just a few recent examples.
Nancy Pelosi has big plans for America. But first, she needs allies like liberal Tony Vargas.
And Pelosi are breaking our country. And if Republicans stay home and don't vote, we're letting them.
Pelosi can't make things this bad all on her own. She needs Dan Kildee, Pelosi's right-hand man.
Get ready for the mother of all tax bombs. Pelosi and the president have declared war on working Americans.
Look, obviously that looks much differently today.
Really? It does? It looks much. What did they say about Nancy Pelosi? They talked about her policies. They talked about what she believes. You can't do that. These people are sick. These people are dangerous. I'm telling you. To freedom of speech, to freedom of thought, to freedom of ideas. You know what we just found out? Thanks, I think, in part to Elon Musk. I could be mistaken, but the Department of Homeland Security reportedly was meeting with all the social media platforms back before and leading up to the 2020 election about what to allow on and what not to allow on. Can you even fathom that? But that's for another time. All right, so here's more. This is Todd and Leanne Caldwell of The Washington Post. Cut 285.
I think it was Susan Collins about 6 weeks ago, Leanne, that essentially said, you know, a member of Congress is going to get killed, essentially. And you know, I think, you know, all of this can sound and seem alarmist in the moment until we have an incident like this.
Right, exactly. And members of Congress have actually been warning about this for a long time, especially after since January 6th. Before January 6th, there were threats too. Susan Collins went through this after the Kavanaugh incident. And you had the shooting on the baseball field where a Bernie Sanders supposed supporter came and shot Republicans who were practicing. This is something that has been a problem in this country for several years.
Now, Susan Collins, as Tim Russert, oh, may he rest in peace, as Chuck Todd said, Susan Collins recently said that some member of Congress is going to get killed. You know why she said that, Chucky? She said that after someone threw a brick through her residence, the window of her residence. You left that out, didn't you, Chucky? Of course, she's a Republican. Let's go to 280. This is going to be Todd and Danielle Pietka from the American Enterprise Institute, 286.
It's interesting, Danny, and in some ways, you know, we're going to think about this. Hey, we need more security and we need more of this. And there's no doubt we've had harsh rhetoric in our politics for decades. But the one thing we haven't had in our politics for the last decade is what social media does and this amplification. And it's hard not to sit here and like these. They may look like I'm not going to draw the straight line yet, but I'm drawing dotted lines. It does feel like this is the difference maker and why suddenly there have been so many acting out of these violent scenes.
It's not only in politics. You know, it's in everything. It gives agency to people who have nutty ideas. It gives them a sense of being part of a community that thinks the way they do and validates what they're thinking about doing.
Oh, so you mean like Cory Booker saying my testosterone makes me want to punch Trump in the face, and Nancy Pelosi herself on January 6th in that recently released video, I wish Trump would come down here so I could punch him, and Joe Biden who wanted to take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him, and Chuck Schumer threatening the Supreme Court justices, you won't know what hit you, and Hirono, the senator, Democrat senator, saying this is a literal call to arms, that kind of stuff. Is that what you're talking about?
No.
I'm talking about MAGA people. MAGA people. That was 286. There is 287. Let's add that in there right now if we can. 287. This is Todd and former Democratic strategist. Not former, but Democratic strategist. I can't pronounce the name. Ojital Hinoshoa, I think. Probably wrong, but here it is. 287.
Every recent election, there is an attack on Nancy Pelosi, mm-hmm. right? And everyone uses her as sort of the boogeyman. You know, action, this rhetoric has consequences. And what I will say is when I worked at the DNC, I cannot tell you, every week we had a threat. And there was a bomb outside. Everyone is well aware on January 6th outside the DNC and RNC. They still haven't caught those people. But the rhetoric has consequences. And we're seeing that here. And it's unfortunate. We might have leaders on both sides call it out. But what's actually going to happen now?
And look, the apocalyptic language that's been adopted mainstreamed in our politics is not helpful. I'm not trying to sit here and be a language police. But at the end of the day, just 95% of people can weed out what's real and what isn't. But the 5% who can't, it becomes the act out.
Oh, so I was looking at the wrong cut. So that was the proper out cue for before. And this was the act out. Sorry about that. The act out. Like punch Donald Trump in the face because of your testosterone. Beat the hell out of Donald Trump. You won't know what hit you, Supreme Court justices. And by the way, from what I understand, the illegal protests outside the home of conservative Supreme Court justices, I think it's one every day, different one every day, they rotate, are continuing. Illegal, 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 and they're allowed to continue because they're the conservative justices whose homes are being protested outside. Do you see how things work in this country? With the media, with the Justice Department, with politicians, with politics, with enforcing laws and not enforcing laws? Are you starting to see? All right. She was referred to by David Rubin, our guest earlier. She is gay and she is African-American, or I should say black. I don't know what if she's African-American technically, but she's black and she's a lesbian, which is, in my opinion, why she's there. The White House spokesperson, Karine Jean-Pierre, as a guest on MSNBC's Sunday show, hosted by Jonathan Capehart, who was, Mr. President, I'm scared. Remember that one from last week? Okay. Well, here he is. They're talking about Pelosi, of course, 291.
I have to say, just watching and hearing the comments from the speaker is heartbreaking. And it is. I can't even imagine. I don't want to imagine what they're going through. And of course, it's traumatizing. And we heard from the president yesterday afternoon, and folks also heard from the vice president last night. Our thoughts are with the family, with Nancy Pelosi and her husband, Paul Pelosi, and clearly their children, and we wish him a speedy recovery, but it is horrific.
Okay, more 292.
It is horrific and just very sad what we're seeing. And it goes to what we're seeing currently. We have to condemn political violence. It is something that should not be controversial. It is something that should not be partisan. It is something that all of us need to say that. And it should be done in one voice. But sadly, it has become political and we need to end this. This is what the president has said multiple times. And he's talked about it in his speeches and in his remarks. And the thing that is probably the most haunting about when we hear the reports of this assailant, of the attacker that we were speaking of, is that he was yelling out the things that we heard during January 6th, which is, where is Nancy?
Okay. You don't have to get that from January 6th. If you're off your rocker or a sick criminal and you're going into the house looking for Nancy, you're going to say, where is Nancy? I don't think you, whatever. One more from her, 293 with Jonathan Capehart.
Has the White House, has the president reached out to, say, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, in an effort to get everyone together and put out a bipartisan condemnation or statement about the political environment we're in and tamping down the rhetoric? A show, a unified show of force against what we're facing.
Well,
right now.
As you know, you interviewed the president most recently, and he believes in reaching out to the other side and working together. And that is something that you see throughout his career. So that is not anything that's unusual, right, for him to reach over to the other side. I don't have anything to speak of about any type of statement.
Has the president reached out to the other side to get all sides together to put out a statement about all this? Well, you know, throughout his career, the president has worked with the other side. He always talks about that. But a statement on this? No. Has he reached out now? No. You got to love this. You really do. One more here. 294.
The president himself has been very clear. He has talked about that. When you interviewed the president, you all talked about the soul of the nation. Mm-hmm. The reason why this president ran for president in the first place just a couple of years ago, which is the attack that we were seeing on democracy. We still have people out there who are undermining that, undermining our free and fair elections. And the president has spoken to that multiple times in multiple speeches. And what we saw on January 6th still exists. It still exists. Mm-hmm. But again, this should not be a partisan issue.
Okay. I want you to, this is going to be 297, okay, and 299. This is Joe Biden Friday night talking about 2020 election. You know how they won, how he won the 2020 election? Listen carefully to 297.
And by the way, if they do, that means not a joke, everybody. That's why we were defeated in 2018 when they tried to do it. We went to 54 states.
Oh, excuse me, 2018. We went to 54 states. 54 states. Cuckoo, cuckoo. And folks, I wish you could see this video. I'm going to play something for you. This is 299. It's just a bunch of noise. Listen to it.
Wait. Which side do you want on?
This side.
All right.
Yeah.
Wait.
Let me explain what just happened there. You know that Joe Biden has a history. You could see the videos over and over and over of getting behind little girls, smelling them, bending down, kissing them on the cheek, stroking their hair, smelling them again, grabbing them by the arms, whatever. We know that he gave a speech not a few weeks ago. I played the soundbite right in the middle of the sentence. He says, "You got to say hello to me." He looks at someone in the crowd. You know, I knew her a long time ago. We did a lot together. She was 12 and I was 30. But anyway, this guy's got problems. We know that in his daughter's diary, reportedly, she writes about how he showered with her and it affected her sexually in later in life. The video I played for you, the sound that you heard, folks, early voting in Delaware. Biden went to vote early. So did his 18-year-old niece. Look it up. This is on the Daily Mail, did a story on this. Put Biden votes early, Daily Mail. Check it out. His 18-year-old niece came with him. It was her first time voting. So what happens? So they give you some kind of tag or some kind of ticket that you got to put on your chest, you know, the sticker, a sticker. So he takes hers. And he's behind her, and then he walks around in front of her. Which side you want it on? Which side you want it on? I mean, give her the sticker. Let her put it on her own chest. She's 18. He puts it on her chest, and his hand lingers there and kind of engulfs her breast after he puts the sticker on. It's only on there for another second or two, but it's disgusting. It's Joe Biden-ish. It's creepy. It's who he is. See you tomorrow with Dinesh D'Souza, Steve Malzberg on TNT Radio.